You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Marion Franklin, a GB canoe slalom athlete.
Yeah, I'm Joe Clark. I am the Olympic champion from Rio 2016.
I'm Joe Fraser, Team GB gymnast.
Hey, my name's Emma Wilson. I'm a windsurfer. I'm really happy to be selected for Team GB for Paris 2024.
This is Anything But Footy, the Olympic and Paralympic podcast, covering the games all the time rather than once every 4 years, whether that's the summer or Winter Olympics. I'm John.
And I'm Michael. And it is 6 months to go. Yes, woo! 6 months to go to the Paris 2024 Summer Olympics. And after that, the first ever Paralympics to be staged in Paris as well.
Coming up in this episode, another bonus edition this week as the countdown gathers pace and we celebrate Great British Hockey booking their spot in the women and men's competition this summer.
We will hear from two of the stars of that qualifying tournament success.
Hello, my name is Giselle Ansley. I am one of the GB hockey players that at the weekend qualified for the Paris Olympics.
My name is Nick Bandarak. Even with the groups being announced a couple of days ago, you have a look at it and you see we've got France and you can't help but wonder what that would be like, being able to play France in their own backyard.
Also joined by a Team GB mini mascot. We'll round up the rest of the news from the games. Boxing, swimming, para table tennis, cycling, the Youth Olympic Games. There should be a song saying we always win at the curling. If there hasn't been one written already, I will have a go later. And it's 100 years of the Winter Games. I reckon we all have our own favourite standout moment. I think I know what Michael's might be.
Stay in touch with us and see what we're about anytime. You can always find Anything But Footy on social media. We're on all the platforms. You can also find us and read our blogs on our website, anythingbutfooty.com.
So the Olympics is just 6 months away. That's about 180 days. It was September 2017 when it was confirmed, along with LA in 2028, that the French capital would stage the Games for the third time, joining London and soon to be LA. But it's the first time Paris will stage the Paralympics, which start at the end of August, compared with the Olympics on Friday, July 26th, just in case you haven't got it ingrained in your brain like Michael and I. We obviously can't wait, but neither can the British hockey teams now, who are both celebrating their places in Paris. Both needed to finish in the top three of their qualifying tournaments in Valencia and Oman. And we'll hear how the British men did it shortly, but first the British women, medalists for the past three games, two bronze in London and Tokyo, and one unforgettable golden night in Rio in 2016. But it wasn't the easiest of routes to Paris. After progressing in second place from their group after a narrow defeat to Spain, Holly Pern-Webb's side lost 3-2 to Belgium in the semi-finals before having to pick themselves up and beat Ireland in the third place playoff, effectively win or bust for the Olympic Games. Win they did, 2-1, thanks to goals from Welsh stars Sarah Jones and Scotland's Katie Robertson. Cue celebrations and a lot of relief as we're about to hear from Rio Olympic champion Giselle Ansley.
Absolutely. I think it's something that we did not want to think about. And when we were going into that final game, knowing that it was pretty much do or die Olympic space or not, it was definitely something in the back of some of our minds who had either been to the Olympics previously or, you know, had grown up watching the Olympics and being inspired by those girls in London and Rio and stuff like that. So, yeah, a big relief that we can finally say that we are definitely going.
You have played in some big matches, of course, at Olympic and Commonwealth Games level. Where did this one rank in terms of pressure?
You know, I've been thinking about this since the game and definitely before as well. I think it's probably the most pressurised game that I've been part of, without doubt. You know, we've had to go through qualification before, but nothing seemed to come down to that one game where it was literally you win this or you don't qualify. So, yeah, medal matches, finals, whatever it is, I don't think anything quite came close to that game on Saturday.
You talked about pressure. I mean, Michael put pressure on you with that first question. You know, the Olympics is now synonymous with GB hockey women. I mean, that's pressure itself.
Yeah, well, you know, pressure, we talk about pressure being a privilege. It's quite a cliched saying, but, you know, if you've got pressure on you, you've obviously done something to deserve it. And I guess that is what's happened with the results previously. And this being, you know, hopefully a fourth Olympics where we can try and keep GB hockey on the map.
Before the tournament, I spoke to Sarah Robertson on the podcast, and she's put on Insta today that it was a brutal Olympic qualification process, because it is different, isn't it? It hasn't been like this before, where you've all gone to a tournament and it is, as you say, win or bust.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the Rio Olympic qualification, there were definitely more places available during the qualifying tournament, and actually, because we won, as England, we won the Europeans in 2015, we automatically qualified from that. So kind of that reduced that pressure. For Tokyo, it was, you know, we had the more games. So we had like just one team and we played them twice. So that made a big difference. And then this, yeah, three teams coming from that tournament, coming from eight. It was tough. Yeah, never faced anything like it. And with other tournaments going on as well, so the one that was in Ranchi, in India, and, you know, knowing that they kind of had finished, knowing that our game essentially was to qualify the very final place, so the 12th team to qualify, all just added to it, I think. And as I'm going to say it probably many times today, is the pure relief after that game was something else.
So walk me through then the 24 hours ahead of what you've said there was the biggest pressured match of your career. What's the meal like, the team meal like, the night before in the hotel? Are people bouncing off the walls? Are there sort of quiet confidences around the place? What's happening?
Yeah, so it's a good question, because we obviously had a day off the day before the game. And so we kind of left all our meetings to the evening so that people had that kind of time in the morning to relax, decompress, you know, park the Belgium game and then start to refocus. So we did all of our kind of prep that evening, had dinner, and actually I think it was a quiet confidence. We knew that we were prepared. We knew that we'd done pretty much everything that we could. The biggest thing I always think about throughout my career is that I just want to have no regrets when I finish playing. And I think that was a key thing. We knew that we had prepared as best we could, that everyone was ready to just go out and do their job the next day. So yeah, definitely quiet confidence, as well as not getting too hyped up. We didn't play till 3:30 the next day. So, you know, you still have plenty of time to get yourself in the zone and do whatever you need to do.
And the following morning, I mean, breakfast, is that an easy meal to eat, and then you've got the bus ride in? Is someone saying something or doing something that you think maybe just made the difference on the day?
So breakfast was, you know, pretty chilled. We ate it in the normal hotel breakfast room and stuff, and then we do have a pre-match meal as well, so that's just the team. And it was just like, in that sense, we tried to keep everything just as normal as possible. So it was all exactly the same as it ever has been for any of those games. You know, not making it any bigger deal than it needs to be, because everyone knows deep down the pressure that's on that game. But, you know, and we had spoken about it. We have players meetings. We talk about that kind of stuff. We talk about the pressure. We talk about dealing with it, how each one of us individually will react differently, et cetera, et cetera. So all that had been done again. And it was then just about making sure that everyone was in their right spot. Eating is definitely not easy for some people, like you say. You know, it's force feeding is how people describe meals over that the course of that day. I just can't wait to not have to eat four meals in a day again, you know, stuff like that. But that kind of made it a bit more lighthearted. And then just had to go about doing the business.
You join us on the podcast with 6 months to go to the games. You want to have a bit of downtime after, as you've said, the stressful situation you've had, but it's not that far away.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's not far away at all. I think this is the latest that qualification has ever been before. I think back to kind of for Tokyo, we qualified in the October of 2019. So it was a lot longer to prepare, basically. But, you know, you don't leave Olympic preparation until the last 6 months anyway. You know, this has been years and years of hard work. And, you know, as of September 23, you know, we knew that something had to change after some disappointing results last summer. And, you know, you definitely can't take your foot off the gas now. We definitely need a few, you know, we've got a couple of weeks, you know, to just kind of decompress and take a bit of time, because, you know, we're going to have to ramp up even more when we get back into training. Club season starts again as well. So, yeah, there's no real time to take your foot off the gas. But in terms of a mental break, the next 2 weeks, we've got that bit of time just to, you know, get ourselves kind of sorted and ready to go again.
And the pools have been drawn for the Olympics already this week, and you're in Pool B, and you've managed to avoid Netherlands, who of course are the reigning champions, but you have got Spain back in your group. And of course Spain were the team that beat you in Valencia, and they progressed, and you had to then go and beat Ireland. So a bit of revenge maybe.
yeah, I mean, as I've said before, and we talk about this quite a lot, on any given day any team pretty much can beat any team. Yeah, that is the level of hockey at the moment. And yeah, as you say, we've avoided the Dutch, but there's a crossover. So, you know, if you avoid them in the group stage, you're going to hit them at some point. So it's all about basically focusing on the job in hand, you know, one game at a time. Like we took through the Rio phase, we took through the qualification, you know, one game at a time, focus on the next opponent that you've got. Don't get carried away with yourself. But yeah, I mean, we've lost many games in the last couple of years, so there's probably revenge to get on most teams, I think, at the moment.
John and I were both in the Deodoro in 2016. At that final, I think we would both say probably the greatest sporting occasion that we've been to. I got my copy of the History Makers book back out at the weekend and had a little flick through that. And obviously, it's two editions on. A lot's changed in terms of the Great Britain hockey team. But in general terms, how much has the women's game changed since we had to delay news at 10 to watch you guys?
To be honest, the game has changed a huge amount in terms of the speed, the tactics, just, you know, the technical level. It's changed drastically. Your rules have even changed, you know. So there's a big difference, but at the same time, I think one thing that has stayed very consistent is kind of the mindset and the mentality that you have to take into every single game. It's something that we pride ourselves on. It's something we work very hard at as a squad, and you know, hopefully kind of that team first mentality and sticking to kind of the values that we have as a squad will take us a long way, hopefully, this summer. But yeah, the game itself is changing. It's changing all the time. I think that's something that's super exciting about the sport, to be honest.
Final question from me then. I mean, there were a decent cohort of British fans in Rio. We know Tokyo, of course, was a behind closed doors game. And we are being told by the British Olympic Association we are not under any circumstances to call this one like a home games. But there will be a fair bit of support because it's just a train ride away for most people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one thing that's amazing. I mean, we're so fortunate with friends and family that travel to support us as well. And then, you know, let alone the the wider British public and the hockey community. So, I mean, we may not be allowed to allude to it as a home games, but I'm sure that our fans are going to be making every effort to make it feel just like that. And I mean, there's a really cool bit of history with hockey. We're going to be the only sport playing in the same stadium that it was played in 100 years ago. So, I mean, that also adds a really cool aspect to the hockey at the Olympics this summer. So it's going to be super exciting.
Well, stay fit, keep well, keep healthy. Six months to go, and we look forward to seeing you back in that stadium that hosted in 1924.
Absolutely, let's hope so. Thank you.
Gisele Anzi speaking to Anything But Footy, and as we heard in that interview, the pools have also been drawn for Paris. Great British hockey women are in Pool B with Australia, Argentina, Spain, the US and South Africa. And the British men, well, as you're about to hear in the interview, they will face Netherlands, Germany, Spain, host France and South Africa in Pool A of their tournament. After it appeared a somewhat smoother qualification, they beat New Zealand in the semi-finals to secure their place in Paris and leaving with the silver medal after a defeat to current world champions Germany. And I've been speaking with Great Britain and England forward Nick Bandarak.
I'm 31, very lucky to be a part of the squad, the GB men's hockey squad that qualified for the Olympic Games this summer in Paris.
Well, you brought up your age, Nick. About time we got you to an Olympic Games, isn't it?
It's been a dream for a very, very long time. I've had to wait a while to get the opportunity to be in the mix for something like this. So, having spent a bit of time on the outside and watched every games from about 2000 onwards as an avid fan, it's nice to be in a position whereby there's a potential to be competing.
Well, congratulations obviously on the qualification. We were just having a quick chat there before we began recording, and actually it wasn't too stressful, was it, to get you there and to secure the spot in Paris?
Yeah, the magnitude of a tournament like that can always lead to moments of huge pressure, but thankfully we managed to deal with that as a squad pretty well. The group games were largely comfortable, and we thankfully managed to get a 2-goal buffer in the deciding game to clinch that spot in Paris. So it certainly could have been a bit more stressful than it was in terms of closer games or potentially not performing to our ultimate potential as a group, but yeah, thankfully we managed that pretty well and got through it largely unscathed.
Talking of pressure, there was a little bit of pressure obviously on the women's team in their match against Ireland. But how pleased are you that both men and women are going to be in their rightful place at the Olympic Games in Paris?
We're chuffed. It's huge for GB hockey to have both squads there, and it's amazing to see the time and effort that goes into both squads at Bisham Abbey on a day-to-day basis. And we've seen the hard work that the girls have put in the build-up to this tournament. And so for them to get their rewards was massive. And it was the first thing that all the lads were asking. The games kind of crossed over a little bit ultimately. So whilst we weren't aware of the women's result until the end of ours, it was pretty much a first thing that all the lads were asking. So to see them get the job done was massive for the programme.
You've obviously qualified fairly late on in the process just because of the way the calendar has been. What can you do in 6 months to go to the Olympic Games? Because I presume most of the hard work's probably been done already.
Yeah, it's been a shortened cycle with Tokyo obviously being delayed a year. So for us, the preparation and planning that's gone into that has always been around Paris and building for Paris. And it was one of the first slides that Paul Revington, our coach, showed us early on in the cycle was exactly how many days it was until the competition began. So it's never really been on the table for us to even consider not being there. And so whilst we're obviously very proud of the achievement to get there and to qualify, ultimately that was the way we view it as something that simply had to be done. It was never going to be the case for us that we weren't going to consider being able to compete. So all the preparation and build-up has been for that tournament. So to guarantee that spot and book the ticket has been fantastic. But ultimately, it doesn't change anything with regards to our preparations that have been building over the last couple of years.
And in terms of the calendar, how does the GB calendar look between now and Paris for you guys?
Very big training block coming up, to be blunt. The next competitive games for us in the Pro League aren't until June, And whilst we have a very, very busy schedule from there, we have a lot of games in a very short space of time. We have a big training window now where we can hone the things that need to be honed from the last few months and the tour to Argentina and this tournament in Oman in particular. And then that will hopefully set us up to execute in those games. And that will be our final prep going into Paris from there.
We did a few interviews ahead of these Olympic qualifiers, and a few of the players said they're sick to death of hearing phrases like "where were the Germans" and hearing the names like Sean Curley. You weren't even born last time the men were on an Olympic podium. How much does that dream burn inside you and the rest of the squad to get back to that level?
It would be incredible. It really would. You can kind of single out the moments from every game's gone by that you've watched on the sidelines and think what it would be like to be a part of that. But I guess nothing would ever really truly prepare you for what that moment would be like. And as I say, you hear stories about it. I was very lucky to grow up close to Imran Shawani. And so I grew up playing with his boys. And so I've seen the impact that someone achieving what he managed to achieve in the game can have on those around him. And so to even contemplate being in a position to hopefully replicate something like that would be unbelievable. But the whole squad's very aware there's an awful long time between now and Paris, as close as it feels with it just being 6 months out. But yeah, a lot of work still to be done between now and then to make anything like that a reality.
Have you allowed yourself to look at those images that the organisers of the Olympic Games keep posting online about what venues and what opening ceremonies are going to look like?
I may have looked at the stadium a few times and tried to picture what it would be like and to wonder about kind of what it would feel like, what it would look like to be a part of games like that on the pitch. And even with the groups being announced a couple of days ago, you have a look at it and you see we've got France, and you can't help but wonder what that would be like, being able to play France in their own backyard. So yeah, there's a lot of things that will no doubt get even more exciting in the build-up. So it'd be important just for us to stay on task as a group between now and then and focus on the things that ultimately we can control.
Yeah, you're in Pool A, Netherlands, Germany, Spain, France, South Africa, the other nations. Who stands out for you there when you look back at the last World Cup? Obviously, Germany beating Belgium in the final. I know you were part of the England squad for that World Cup in 2023. But when you look at Pool A, where are you looking? Who should we be watching out for?
To be honest, it is a really tough pool. I think you can't go to the Olympic Games and expect anything other than that. The one positive that kind of immediately kind of jumped out was these are all teams that we played a number of times. We come up against Holland every few months, it seems like, and Germany the same. So we know them inside out and vice versa. Spain, we've played an awful lot over the last couple of years. So again, there's some familiarity there. And even South Africa with the Pro League in 2022 and then the Commonwealth Games bronze medal match as well. We've got some experience against them. So yeah, a lot of familiar teams in there that we're going to be going up against. And I think you can't help but look at Holland and Germany purely with their experience in major tournaments and them being able to execute on the biggest stage. There's going to be some massive competition there. But ultimately, we feel like our game being put out there at the level that we can play at goes toe-to-toe with anyone in the world. And ultimately, if we want to get to where we want to get to, we've got to beat everyone. And whether that's in the group stage or later on, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Is there any kind of strategy behind the thinking in terms of you'd rather come up against people in the group stage, or are you just aware that to achieve your ultimate goal, whoever it is, it might be Belgium, might be India, Australia, Argentina, New Zealand or Ireland from the other pool, at some point you're going to have to beat these teams?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. We have to beat them. We're not going to get an easy run through to the final. No one ever will. I think the real strength of the men's game at the moment is you can look at the top 6, 7, 8, 9 teams in the world, and on any given day, anyone can beat anyone. I think that makes it a really exciting prospect, certainly for the neutral. But ultimately, it just will come down to who performs best over those 2 weeks, because whoever does will get the rewards that come with it. But ultimately, anyone can beat anyone. So there will be some results that some people might look at from the outside and call shocks or upsets. But in reality, it's pretty fiercely contested at the top of the world for the men's game right now. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of challenges throughout those 2 weeks for sure.
And just finally, I appreciate, obviously, we've still got squad selection and team announcements and things to come. And I'm sure that that will be on all of your minds at the moment. But, you know, thinking that you are going to be part of that cohort that get the Eurostar to Paris, how exciting a prospect is it for you to be on that stage finally?
Wow. Yeah, it would be unbelievable. It, without kind of being too cliche about it, it really would be a dream come true. And as I said, I remember watching every games from the Australian golden goal in 2004 being one of the earliest ones that really jumps out for me personally, and every tournament beyond, and even being in the crowd at 2012 for me was a real eye-opening experience as to what the top of the game can really, really achieve and be like to be a part of. So, yeah, it'll be unbelievable. And yeah, to as you say, get on that Eurostar to Paris would be a pretty special experience. But as you say, there's a lot of things to happen between now and then. So I don't want to start getting too far ahead of myself on that front. So yeah, we'll see how the next few months go.
All the very best for the next 6 months.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Michael talking to Nick Bandarak. The men and women's Olympic hockey tournaments start on day one of the game, Saturday, July 27th, because the opening ceremony is day zero. I love the fact that that is, happens at the Olympics. Congratulations to all at Great British Hockey.
So great news for GB hockey. Plenty more news to come, though, here on the Olympic and Paralympic Sport Podcast. This is Anything But Footy.
It's only a kick. A jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This is Anything But Footy, and 6 months to go to the Olympic Games, and Team GB are busying themselves sorting out everything an athlete may need to represent Great Britain this summer. So I'm delighted to say on the pod, we're joined by a brand new Team GB mini mascot. Now, what's that, I hear you cry? Well, they launched with rowing's Helen Glover, the Olympic champion, last summer, nominated and then selected children to become the official mascots for Team GB, experiencing extraordinary moments and being part of the action ahead of the journey to Paris 2024. So let's welcome one of the six.
My name's Santino, I'm 9 years old.
Santino, firstly, how excited are you?
Really excited.
And do you know who nominated you?
My mum.
And are you pleased with that nomination?
Yes.
I should think so. So what are you most looking forward to about being a mini mascot?
Watching the Olympic Games. We get to meet the athletes and go to their pit sessions.
And maybe had the odd selfie with them, maybe?
Yeah.
And what about your favourite sports? Can you tell us maybe some of the sports you might like to see? Or what about your favourite sports person?
Swimming, running, and football. Gareth Bale is a footballer, and Adam Peaty swimming.
Oh, yes. So Adam Peaty is going to the World Swimming Championships next week, looking to continue his comeback. So, yeah, a great one to support Adam Peaty. You mentioned swimming and Adam Peaty. Do you do swimming yourself, Santino?
Yeah, breaststroke.
Ah, so you could be the next Adam Peaty. He's speechless. He just laughed at that. What do you know about Paris?
Yeah, they have the Eiffel Tower and they have Disneyland.
Two of the most crucial parts of Paris. And what is fantastic is that the Eiffel Tower is going to play a major part in the Olympics as well. Well, look, Santino, I think you're going to be a brilliant mini mascot for Team GB. The one thing I think that mascots need to do is do a big, come on, Team GB, a big cheer. So can we finish off with, come on, Team GB, something along those lines?
Come on, Team GB.
Excellent stuff. Santino, thank you so much. Enjoy yourself as a mini mascot. And thank you for talking to Anything But Footy.
Thank you. Bye.
Great news that Team GB are including some young fans as part of the celebrations for Paris 2024. Let's continue with the rest of the news this week. Six men, four women have been picked by GB Boxing to compete at the upcoming Olympic qualifying event in Italy. It's taking place on the 4th to the 11th of March. There will be 59 places at Paris 2024 on offer at the event, which is overseen by the International Olympic Committee and is being officially called the first world qualification tournament. Plenty of politics happening in the world of boxing, as we have discussed on more than one occasion. Charlie Davison, Rosie Eccles and Delicious Ori have all secured places at Paris 2024 with their performances at the European Games last summer, of course. Good luck to the others taking part. Savannah Stubley, Ellie Glynn, Shona Whitwell and Chantel Reid. We've also got some of the men in action as well from England, and Taylor Bevan, who's from Wales, and the heavyweight Patrick Brown, who impressed at the recent World Boxing Cup in Sheffield. And talking of that, a bit of disappointment for Delicious Ori, actually, in the men's 92K plus. He lost in the first round of that competition. So, yeah, back to the drawing board a little bit for Delicious, but the process will continue and go on.
We may have mentioned it's 6 months to go to the Olympic Games, and the World Aquatics Championships gets underway this time next week. Diving starts us off on Friday, February 2nd, with the women's 1 metre springboard and the mixed team in the 3 metres and 10 metres. The men's and women's 400 metre freestyle finals and 4x100 relays are the highlights of day one of the swimming. That's from Sunday, February 11th. I hope you're putting this in your Olympic diaries. And there's also open water, marathon swimming to you and me. And Great Britain's women's water polo team will be returning to the World Championships for the first time in more than a decade after their brilliant seventh place finish in the Europeans we mentioned the other week. So big stories to come. There was, of course, the return of Tom Daley, Adam Peaty, both of them making comebacks, and Andrea Spendolini-Syriacs on the world stage as well. Plenty to watch out for the coming weeks. Make sure you follow us to not miss any podcast episode. And also, as Michael said earlier, check out our socials, Anything But Footy on all of the socials, or you can check out our latest blogs or the sporting calendar on the website, anythingbutfooty.com.
Time for other news from the games now. We've heard lots about qualifying for the Olympics, but qualification for the Paralympics is also ongoing. Plenty of medal success for British para table tennis. Erin McKibben, Ashley Facey, Megan Shackleton all won gold in the US Para Open in Corpus Christi in Texas. Silver medals for Jack Hunter-Spivey, Martin Perry, Billy Shilton, Joshua Stacey and Paul Karabardak, who took a bronze. Ashley Facey and Josh Stacey, could be a detectives partnership, that, Facey and Stacey. They won gold in the men's class 18 doubles. And I'll point you in the direction as well of David Clark, new CEO, or relatively new CEO at Paralympics GB, who's been a recent guest on our sister podcast, Great British Bosses.
British cycling have looked to basketball and Aussie rules for their latest appointment. John Bartlett will be joining the Great Britain cycling team next month as performance pathways manager, tasked at helping the next generation into the sport and beyond. He's most recently worked at the NBA Global Academy and the AFL in Victoria.
History has been made for Great Britain, Team GB, at the Youth Olympic Winter Games, which are taking place in South Korea. Zach Carrick-Smith won gold in the men's Alpine combined, having been 27th after the Super G run. He nailed the slalom. He completely nailed the slalom to go from 27 to 1. He has won Great Britain's first ever Alpine skiing Olympic medal in any games. And the gold was only Team GB's third ever Winter Youth Olympics medal. Carrick-Smith, a 16-year-old, followed it up with a silver in the giant slalom. And his mum, Emma Carrick-Anderson, she competed in Alpine skiing for Team GB at four Winter Games between Albertville in 1992 and Salt Lake City in 2002.
Also history at Kangwong 2024 because Skip Logan Carson, Tia Laurie, Archie Hislop and Holly Burke all won the mixed team curling final at the Winter Youth Olympics. As I said, we always win at the curling. In the final, they beat Denmark 7-5 after, get this, being 4-1 down after just two ends. Absolutely top draws. They had a good chef de mission in Olympic champion Eve Muirhead, of course, at those games. And you can listen to her interview in Great British Bosses that we did a couple of weeks ago as well. But looking good for the future for Team GB. Now, 6 months to go to Paris 2024. We may have mentioned it on this podcast, but it's also 100 years of the Winter Games. Yes, in 1924, 258 athletes from 16 national teams came together in the small alpine town of Chamonix in France for what later became the first ever Olympic Winter Games. For Great Britain, there were 41 men and just 3 women across 6 sports, and they came home with a gold, silver, and 2 bronze. Since then, the Games have evolved with 3,000 athletes from over 90 national Olympic committees. And of course, we know where the next 3 Games are after Milano Cortina in 2026. We've got the French Alps, we've got Salt Lake City and Switzerland in 2038. So I know what my standout moment is. I have a feeling I might know what Michael's is.
Well, you think I'm going to say Torvald and Dean,
I think you?
You
are, yes.
But I'm not. Although that's my earliest Olympic memory, Bolero and Torvald and Dean, I've got to say my standout Winter Olympic moment has got to be the women's curling team and Eve Muirhead. Because, well, for 2 reasons, really. One, as you know, I was covering those games for Talk Sport, and the medal was won in the early hours of the morning. And I can remember Talk Sport coming to me and saying, they're going to win a medal, aren't they, in the curling in the next few minutes? Just talk about it. And there I was on national radio for about 15 minutes trying to describe the curling off a monitor. And having sort of got to know Eve a little bit in the build-up to those games, having interviewed her, obviously, about the flag bearer announcement, and then having, in particular, got to know her since the games and her role with the British Olympic Association now, the fact, obviously, that she's chef de mission for that youth Winter Olympics that we've talked about. We obviously spoke with her, didn't we, around our London Marathon special because she was running that for the Doddy Foundation. So bringing all that together, gold medal for Team GB in the women's curling in Beijing in 2002, Eve Muirhead and the rest of the rink, that would be my standout moment.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. And Rona Martin obviously winning gold as well with Diddy. No, what was his name? Doddy? Diddy? Who was the commentator?
Doogie Donnelly.
Doogie Donnelly. It made his name as well. So yeah, curling I think is a great call. But my actual standout moment, and as you say, not Torvald and Dean either, although that really probably should be, 2002, Salt Lake City. Now there are lots of issues around those games, but history was made as the Scottish slalom skier Alan Baxter won a first ever skiing medal for Team GB. Now, I was working at the time for Hart and LBC. I can remember jumping around. I think I was in the office as well and going, this is really important. This is massive. And people are like looking at me going, what are you talking about? Obviously, I went on to be their Olympic correspondent, so they kind of knew who I was later. But look, it felt like 2 years after Sydney that these Winter Games were now something for all of us at Team GB, as well as just the ice dance as well. So we were obviously all gutted to find out just a few weeks later that Alan tested positive for a banned drug, and it was in fact a nasal spray. It was different between America and European markets, and his bronze medal was taken away, which is why, as we've heard in the Youth Olympic Winter Games in South Korea, that we have now won our first ever alpine skiing event gold medal. So that really is the moment for me. I grew up. It felt like the sport was growing up. I got married that year. I was growing up. And this was a sport that I really wanted to go and work on. And 3 years later, of course, we got the London Olympics. So for me, 2002 was just one of those moments where I realised what the Winter Games was all about.
I remember that pretty vividly as well, because I remember Alan Baxter actually went early. And then the weather conditions kicked in and everyone was slip sliding out and crashing. And so this improbable medal became a probability. Mm. And it wouldn't be a podcast without me mentioning a ceremony, would it? So another memory, a Winter Olympic memory I'd like to mention from the opening ceremony of Sochi, when the illumination of the Olympic rings didn't work and one of the rings didn't light up. And for all that money that they spent on building what was essentially a kind of winter Disney World in the resort in Russia, and we know obviously subsequently everything that's gone on there, and the rights and well, not many rights but mainly wrongs about that. So for that embarrassment in the opening ceremony on that global stage, in front of all the, you know, great and the good, was something that will also stay with me.
Absolutely. Let us know what your greatest Winter Olympic memory is. 100 years we are celebrating. Could be Eddie the Eagle, Cool Runnings, Lizzie Arnold, Amy Williams, just, I mean, realising that a skeleton wasn't just a tea tray was quite an amazing thing from a British sport point of view. You can get in touch with us at any time, Anything But Footy, on our social media. Check out the website as well. So 100 years of the Winter Olympics and 180 days or 6 months to more Olympic memories and Paris 2024. Stay with us and please tell your mates all about us.
Sports Social Podcast Network.